Mr. Eric Cooper, Reel 4. We were talking about the mess and things. What did you think of Percy?
Well, I thought he was a very good regimental officer, but I think his attitude was more or less the First War type of commanding officer who believed in keeping strict discipline with the officers. I think, too, that he was a little bit too old for the command. You know, the younger officers, as I mentioned before, they like to get out and enjoy themselves, but he just, more or less, just after dinner, he'd go just sit in the mess and read the paper and probably have the odd whiskey and then off to bed. And that's, you know... But
As a young officer, did you respect his experience?
Yes, we respected him, oh yes. Oh yes, we respected Colonel Percy. His bark was worse than his bite, because I became adjutant after a while, and I'd go and leave with him to Newcastle. He would get off at Durham, where he lived, and then I had to reserve a seat for him when I left Newcastle, and he would meet the train at Durham. And the last time his wife actually saw him was at this particular occasion, when his son was also there, and Colonel Percy was very nice to his son. He told, when he left, he said, "Look after your mum, and you know, and stick in at rugby." And he seemed quite a, you know, soft-hearted man. But you know, a normal soldier thought he was very hard, but he wasn't really.
Do you remember any of the other senior or officers?
Yes. We had our second in command was Colonel Slight, which I like Colonel Slight. He was a bit strict to a certain extent, but then again, he was second in command, you see, and he had to keep up appearance with the CO. But Colonel Slight, afterwards, when the war was over and they reformed the Territorial Army, Colonel Slight became the CO of the 17th Battalion Parachute Regiment, 9th DLI, in which I became a member with him. And I got on with Campbell Slight very, very well indeed. And then we had another senior officer, which was, we called him Big Bill Robinson. Quite a tall bloke. Unfortunately, he was killed at in the desert. But he was a local man, Durham man, and he appreciated the Territorial Army. Whereas, of course, before Joss Percy, he was regular. And I know that Joss's attitude to the regular soldier, which I probably was thinking about, the pre-war soldier, he used to say, you know, keep them on their toes, you know, because if they get into if they're in a truck and we've been travelling any distance, is to stop and get them out to exercise their feet, because they're always going to a state of coma, you know, that sort of thing. But the other senior officers, I thought they were all right.
Now, were you still with D Company at this time, or?
I was in D Company when I first went to Bridport, but after that, I changed over and I did all sorts of things. I did assistant adjutant, I did adjutant.
Well, let's look at that. What was the job of the adjutant, as you saw it? What was the adjutant's role?
Well, the adjutant's role was more or less maintain the administrative side of the battalion, keep the diary for the colonel, you know, what he had to do or who was coming to see him and that sort of thing. And more or less it's just the same as a secretary. That's more or less what an adjutant did. And he was more or less the CO's right-hand man. When I say right-hand man, if we were going out to any inspections or anything like that, I had to accompany him. And if there was anything that the colonel disliked, he used to tell me, and I used to have to make a note of him just to remind him later on, or he'd probably say, "Well, I want to see that officer in orders tomorrow," or, you know, this sort of thing.
And other jobs, I know we talked about, you were intelligence officer.
Yeah, I was intelligent as well.
What did that involve?
Well, that involved more or less, this was in peacetime, and you know that the intelligence officers more or less kept a map and pinpointed during action what was happening, and if possible, at least to get a sitrep from brigade headquarters, and used to put it on your map as to what the position of our troops were and the position of the enemy. But in peacetime,
well, home service.
In home service, if you like, that you had what you call an IO section, and you used to take them out and just to observe things and getting them to make a, when they got back, to write down what they've actually seen. It's difficult to explain the whole activities of the intelligence section. It's different when you got into action, and you know you had something to really talk about, something to do. In fact, to be quite honest, in peacetime, you were more or less playing soldiers to a certain extent.
You were also entertainment officer.
Entertainment officer. Well, the mere fact that why I was made entertainment officer, because I was a very keen conjurer in those days. When I was, I suppose the CEO thought, well, there you are, make him entertainment officer.
What did you have to do?
Well, you liaise with the local women's institute. There's always, you know, they used to come and see you when you moved from one particular area to another area. There was always some old dear would come along and say, well, we look after the entertainment of the soldiers. Now, what can we do, you see? We can lay this on or lay that on. Of course, therefore, I had to get in touch with the CEO and said, so-and-so is going to lay on, wants to lay on entertainment for Wednesday night or such a date, and they'll have certain artists. What do you think? You see, and the colonel would say, well, yeah, that's okay. This is the sort of, and more or less liaise with the local women's guilds, and do everything possible to try to keep the soldiers entertained.
What sort of shows would they put on in cooperation with WI?
Well, you had some glee singers, you know, some choir coming along, and some sort of comedian, and sort of Miss Jones girl dancers, or something, you know. You can imagine the usual things that the Jenny put on.
Were they local talent?
Local talent, yes. And well, of course, we did occasionally get the an ENSA show, which unfortunately wasn't very often, but we did get them. And of course, they would liaise with me, and they'd liaise with the with battalion headquarters, which would be passed on to me, and then I had to liaise with them. We also I laid on cinema shows for them. We could hire from divisional headquarters a camera and equipment and films, you know, and you had to lay that on. And very often you had to work the cinema yourself.
We mentioned cinema. Did you see any of the official films during this time?
No, no.
Or propaganda films?
No, no, nothing like that. We did get some instructive films, you know, sort of training films.
What did you think of them?
Well, I thought they were very good. There was one in particular which I thought was excellent, was one on MT, you know, and it was showing you the principle of the otter cycle, you know, which the otter cycle is actually the cycle of the combustion engine, which was invented by a man called, a German called Otto, which was sort of intake, combustion, explosion and exhaust. And it showed you all you know, the different things about transmission. That was very instructive. And then there was also films about gas, which was a sort of it was all acting, of course, but it showed you, you know, how what precautions to take if there was a gas attack, and such as loosening your gas cape and putting on your masks, because in those days we all carried the anti-gas capes and gas masks.
Were these training films, do you think they were realistic and pitched at the right level for the men? Do you think the men learnt something from them?
Well, I think they learned something from them, but in my opinion, I think it helped to relieve the boredom. Because, you know, between Dunkirk and going over the Middle East, it was very, very hectic. It was training, you know, and field events, and, you know, And I think it was better than foot stopping, just to sit down and watch something so they could have a cigarette and watch what's going on. But I think they must have learned something from it.
Was there any other, now, when you had these jobs, you'd be attached to HQ company,
would
you?
HQ, yes.
Would you have more than one of these jobs at a time, or would...
Oh, well, I always had the entertainment officer's job, yes.
And what other jobs would you mix with that?
Well, that was, as a matter of fact, what actually Colonel Percy wanted, that each officer should have at least two jobs. You see, you had an officer who was probably a platoon commander, but he was also a gas officer. He was sent away for a course on gas. Then his job was to come back and give lectures to the soldiers, from what his experience.
Now, what was your other job then, or were you?
Well, my other job was I was either a platoon commander, or entertainment officer, or I was a IO or assistant adjutant and entertainment officer.
So what platoon did you command in the HQ company? Because that would be the specialist platoon.
Well, when I was intelligence officer, I commanded the intelligence section. You see?
Yes.
Also, and one of my other jobs I had was assistant signals officer.
Oh, what did that entail?
Well,
had you been trained in signals?
Well, actually, what it was, no, I hadn't been trained in signals, but the signals officer was training me. You see? And what I had to learn was the Morse code and writing messages, semaphore. And we did have exercises with the heliograph, which wasn't very successful. You know, we actually tried out in Cyprus, and it was absolutely hopeless, where we arranged somebody about 2 miles away, because of, you imagine Cyprus, it is hilly, and a lot of people think it's flat, but it's quite hilly in places. Because we could see the heliograph, but we couldn't decipher any messages. And the internet was never used in the desert itself.
Now, what about the actual training? Because Tiverton was where the battalion really did some hard training on the moors,
yes.
I believe.
Well,
what sort of things were you up to?
Well, excuse me. Training was sometimes done on a platoon basis, where you would be told to go and take a platoon and put a certain section in defence, and the other platoon would be told that at a certain time you are going to try and attack that particular position, and you had to, get to put out your scouts to see what was what, and there's always an umpire there to say, well, who won and who didn't win, you know.
It was winter.
It was winter.
How did the weather conditions affect it?
We had the one exercise which was on Exmoor, and it had to be called off because the battalion had to. We went on the Friday afternoon, and we got there somewhere just before dark, and we were allotted positions. And what we had to do was to dig ourselves in other words, get ourselves underground by daybreak, because we were going to be attacked from the east was going to attack the west, sort of style. You know? And they were sending planes across in the morning to see if, you know, what we looked like. Well, so it happened, we started digging our holes and it absolutely teemed. And as we were digging the slip trenches, they were filling up. And we did get underground, but we're sometimes up to our knees in water. And the next morning it was too late then, it was called off because they knew what the situation was. And It caused a bit of havoc because some of the boys went down with flu and what have you when they got back to Tiverton.
Did the cold cause any problems?
We had the room ration, which had to be issued, which was given to each platoon commander, and you had to go around your section. Well, you know, a platoon has three sections, and I mean, you weren't situated sort of 2 or 3 yards from one another. You were quite a distance. And on the moors, at that particular time, it was absolutely black. You know, there were no stars, no moon, there was nothing. And, you know, it's fine where the hell they were, really.
How did you issue them? Because you have to watch
Oh,
for
well, we used to take it with a spoon and issue it with a spoon. You know, it was ridiculous. But they brought the rum ration round, and they said, "How many men have you got?" Right, and they dished out in your billy can. They dished out so many spoons, and you went round and gave them each a spoon, and you had to make sure that they took this rum. But,
so that they couldn't store it for
They couldn't store it, oh no. And you had to make sure that one didn't give his mate, one who didn't drink, didn't give it to the other fella. In fact, this is the ruling when a rum issue was given, that an officer had to be there to make sure that the person got that rum, that one man didn't get two or three tots, otherwise you'd have been drunk.
Do you think the training that you did that winter on Exmoor and in the Tiverton area, do you think it was realistic and well directed?
Well, I tell you what I thought about the training of the British Army as a whole. When we actually went back into action in the Middle East, it just seemed as if we took it, as it came in our stride. There was no panic. It was just, And I thought to myself, well, the training was terrific. The way, you gradually got into it. Before you knew where you were, you were amongst it. I don't think you understand what I'm talking about. Yes.
Mm. How did you get on with the men? I mean, you'd been in the ranks yourself.
Oh yes. I got on with very well. It was a bit strange at first of all, being in command of a platoon of fellas you never met before, but I find them all right. As a matter of fact, I meet one or two of them still now.
How close did you want to get to them? How did you sort of maintain the differentials between rank, or were you not too?
Well, what I used to do when I could, I used to get the NCOs. Together at night time, if I by any chance got some beer, I'd get them in and sit and have a glass of beer with them or a mug of beer with them.
With the NCOs?
With the NCOs.
Were you on first name terms with the NCOs?
Well, to be quite honest, I wasn't first names with them off parade. I mean, if the CO had ever heard me calling an NCO by his Christian name, they'd been held to play. But it was only at these particular times when I got them. And there was nobody else about it. Then I'd call them by their Christian name. But they never called me by my Christian name.
How did where do you think the line of the role of officers and, junior officers and NCOs, who do you think was responsible for what? On home service, really, during the training. We'll come to it again in action. But who was responsible for what? And who, in a way, was the most important to them?
Well, I think the... platoon sergeants. I mean, if you had a platoon sergeant, you were very, very a good platoon sergeant. That you're very, very lucky because he can help you in lots of respects. Because if you told him what had to be done, he would go out and he'd say it was done. Some of them would, I've known sergeants just forget about that and just tell him what he thought they should be told.
Were most of them good?
I would say 9 out of 10 were good. And then, you did get the occasional one who would become a sergeant. And what actually happened in the Territorial Army, you got people made up as sergeants who had been in the Territorial Army a long time, just by the fact that they'd been in service. But in my opinion, they weren't actually suitable as leaders, not in actual wartime. They were too friendly with the men.
As the time came to be posted overseas, was there any weeding out of the older?
Oh, yes. Well, what happened at Tiverton, before I went back overseas, every man in the division, and that's 50, Dave, had to do a particular march starting from Tiverton. They had to be in field march and service order. We marched from Tiverton to a place called Dulverton. And at Dulverton we stopped and we had something to eat. And then we marched up a hill onto Exmoor and did a dummy attack on Exmoor. Then we marched back down to Dulverton, where we stopped the night. And then We marched from Durban back to Tiverton, and that sorted out quite a lot.
What kind of, I mean, Percy managed it, I presume?
He managed it, yes, although he had a bad leg. Even Cooks, the divisional commander, had to do all these sort of jobs, and the brigadier, he had to do it.
Yeah. What kind of, well, did many fall out in your unit? I mean, get sent.
No, I'm quite honest, I didn't see any falling out in my unit. But I don't know what happened at the back, you see, when you got a battalion of about 900 men, you know. But we did. In fact, we got some older ones who were, when we left Tiverton, they were left behind. But they weren't told it was a mere fact because of that. You know, I don't think anybody would have said, no, you were no good at that. You know, that's it. It just, when they knew they were going overseas, then started weeding them out.
When did you first hear you were going overseas? Did you get much notice?
Well, we did, as a matter of fact, because we had to all get our a cocky drill. We had a tailor from London came along and measured us for for the officers' KD, and then the quartermaster had to go around getting sizes of all the men's hat sizes for the pith helmets, which were never used really. They were actually thrown away at the finish. And then the day we were going, well, 2 days before we were going, that everybody in Tiverton knew what was happening, because when we were marching down the street to the railway station, that everybody in Tiverton was lining the streets, because we'd been at Tiverton for so long. We'd been there for several months, which was most unusual, you know.
Did you guess it was North Africa, or did you think it was perhaps India?
Well, no, we didn't. Be quite honest. When we were on board ship, we didn't know where we were going. We hadn't a clue until we landed at Chufik. We still didn't know where we were going until we went to a place called Kassassin.
We'll come to that then. Yes. So you just knew you were posting, but you didn't know where. You knew it was tropical.
We knew it was tropical. Oh yes.
So what exactly happened when you were... Did you get any embarkation leave?
Yes, we all got embarkation leave, yes. Got a week, you know. In fact, we had one or two embarkation leaves. See, it went like that.
Did everybody behave themselves and come back? Or did most...
Well,
was
I...
Was any trouble?
I know of one who didn't come back. And he was a sergeant. And he was one I had in mind when I was saying that, they became sergeants, but when they came into to do anything really difficult, they weren't good enough.
Were you given any special briefing about what to do and not to do in tropical climates? They didn't tell you where, but what climates?
No, what happened was, when we were on board ship, that we had little lectures given to us.
I'll come back to that then. So where did you go? You left Tiverton.
Mm-hmm. And we went up to Rennick, and we boarded the Orduna, and that was with us until we got to Chufik.
What was the accommodation like on ship for you as officers first?
Well, there was four officers to a cabin. Now, the size of the cabin would be about... 12 by 12. And there were double bunks, one at either side, with in the centre was a wash basin.
So that's not too bad, really.
Oh, no. In my opinion, it was very, very good. Very good.
And what about the men?
Oh, the men, well, I felt sorry for the men. They were in the mess decks and in the hammocks. And what we had to do, the officer of the watch... when I say the officer of the watch, I mean the officer belonging to the Orduna. You were elected as an officer of the watch of the army, and you had to go around with him and go around the mess decks at night. And I used to feel sorry for that, because the heat and the stench, you know, because all portholes had to be closed, and they had a bad time.
Was there on these inspection tours, was there anything you'd have to do, or what were you looking out for?
Well, what we were looking out for first was for smoking and any lights visible, or which could be visible from the outside.
What? Is that why smoking was forbidden?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was there much of a problem with seasickness, either with the men or yourself?
No. Unfortunately, I've never been seasick.
What about the men down below?
There was some of them, oh yes. In fact, some of the officers too, because at one particular time we hit a very, very bad patch of weather. And in the morning when we go down to for breakfast, you'd find there's one or two missing, and then at lunchtime there'd be half a dozen missing, and at dinner there'd be nearly half of them missing. And the next day it was worse still, you know. I was very lucky in that respect.
Who was the officer in command of the troops, OC?
It was a man by called English, Lieutenant Colonel English. He was quite a good bloke, as a matter of fact. I liked him. But when he heard that Colonel Percy was going to give the troops strenuous training on board the ship, such as marching, weapon training, and this sort of thing, you know, he wouldn't have it. He put a stop to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Did that cause any friction between the two of them?
I think it caused a bit of friction with the colonel, but the men liked it. But still, the men were occupied because they had lectures, all sorts of lectures.
Who gave them? Did the officers?
Well, the officers gave them. As a matter of fact, I give them one lecture on trickery, such as three card trick. Having, you know, being a conjurer, you see, I knew all these tricks, the three card trick and what is called pricking the belt and how you could cheat at cards and what have you. And there was also the lectures given
so that
by...
So was an entertainment lecture?
That was a lecture which, I suppose, it is a relaxation for the troops. You know.
But they'd be serious?
Oh, it was serious stuff, oh yes. It was serious. And then, as I say, you had your gas officers as well, who used to, and your weapon training officer. I mean, you did have weapon training just the same, but you didn't have any strenuous exercises.
Why did Percy want these strenuous exercises to do?
Well, to keep the troops on their toes. This is the attitude of Colonel Percy, that all the men at his command should be on their toes at all times.